Thank you for joining the NFCA, the National Foundation for Celiac Awareness, for tonight's monthly webinar. For those of you who do not know me, my name is Kristen Voorhees, and I'm the Healthcare Relations Manager for NFCA, and I will be facilitating this evening's program. It's good to have you with us. All of us at the NFCA appreciate your support and your enthusiasm as we navigate a new topic each month. Many of you may know that 2012 has been the first year that NFCA has implemented a monthly webinar series. We've had such a really great response from the community, and we're really excited to have had such a great ongoing support throughout the year. In fact, we're going to be gearing up for another year of monthly webinars beginning in January to kick off 2013. The first webinar will take place on Tuesday, January 22nd, and we will be featuring expert dietitian Tricia Thompson, who I believe many of you should be familiar with. So please be sure to check out our upcoming schedule on the website, celiaccentral.org. Each month, we aim to bring you timely news, which makes it an opportune time to discuss holiday meal planning this evening. To note, some of you may be wondering what happened to October's monthly webinar, since we're now in November and we've been out of commission for a few months, but due to Hurricane Sandy's impact here on the East Coast, we rescheduled the event for tomorrow, Wednesday, November the 14th, to take place at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. So we hope that you will be joining us then as well. But back to tonight. This evening, we have with us two very well-known bloggers and writers from the gluten-free publishing world, Sylvain Nardone and Amy Green. I am sure that most of you recognize our panelists thanks to their successful blogs, magazines, and cookbooks. Of course, our monthly webinars would not be possible without the sponsorship of celiac disease and gluten-free friendly companies, such as Crunchmaster, who is sponsoring tonight's webinar. They are a longtime supporter of celiac disease, gluten-free, and the NFCA, so it's particularly great to have them with us this evening. So moving on to a few housekeeping items. As we get started, I would like to remind the audience of three important items. The first is that NFCA always archives our webinar presentations and the recordings so that you can access them at no cost at celiaccentral.org. The specific link can be found on your screen, and we post these up to 72 hours after the close of tonight's live event. Secondly, registered dietitians and registered dietetic technicians are able to participate in this live 60-minute webinar to obtain CE credits. NFCA will provide a certificate as proof of participation for the webinar, and attendees will complete this follow-up survey in order to access the certificate. You can expect this in your email from GoToWebinar within about 24 hours. So please be patient and give it a few hours. Finally, I would like to announce the good news that Crunchmaster is participating in our popular Watch and Win, which we do with all of our webinars. So picked at random, five lucky webinar participants will each win a free mixed case of new Crunchmaster Cinnamon and Sugar Grammy Crisps and Cheddar Cheesy Crisps. They will be receiving a mixed case, which includes 12 boxes with six of each flavor. So moving right along to tonight's topic, I would like to welcome and introduce Amy Green, who is the author of Simply Sugar and Gluten Free. She's also the publisher of Simply Sugar and Gluten Free, a blog that I'm sure that many of you are familiar with. And most recently, she helped to establish Nourished, which is an allergen-friendly food blogger conference. I know that our own director of communications, Cheryl, participated in this earlier this year and really had a great time. So I know that Amy is going to be sharing some great tips with everyone this evening. And then Sylvana Nardone she's the founding editor-in-chief of Every Day with Rachel Ray, and so she has quite the experience in writing and cookbooks and recipes and in sharing all of her tips with the consumer audience. She's the author of Cooking for Isaiah, Gluten-Free and Dairy-Free Recipes. Isaiah is her son, as I'm sure many of you know. And most recently, she is now the editor-in-chief of Easy Eats, which is the all-digital gluten-free magazine. So it's great to have you both with us this evening. And to get started, I just want to let everybody know what the timeline for tonight will be. NFCA's goal this evening is to satisfy the holiday dining needs of both the gluten-free novice, so that's probably somebody who is more recently diagnosed, and then, of course, the veterans and those people who are looking for new ideas to share with their family and friends this winter season. First, Amy is going to be speaking about taking the fear out of gluten-free at the holiday dinner table, and then we'll turn it over to Savannah. And then finally, we're going to allow time for questions at the end. So it would be very helpful if everybody could save your questions and inquiries for the final 15, 20 minutes at the end. So Amy, the floor is yours.
Oh, thanks, Kristen. It's great to be here, and I want to thank NFCA for making me a part of this, and also thank you to Crunchmaster, because this is such a great service to be able to talk with people on such a big platform and share this information. Tonight, really what I wanted to address, first, really my main three objectives. One is, one of the things that I think is gets lost when you're gluten-free at the holidays and maybe you can't sit down and share in the meal is that human connection that we all long for and want at the holidays. So I was going to kind of talk about how to add that back in. I wanted to talk about how to add whole foods into our meals. It makes them healthier, but it also is kind of the natural, if you will, way to cook gluten-free. And then I want to talk about recipes and share some of the foods that that we eat at our holiday dinner table. So let's get started. I think when I think about sitting down at the holiday dinner table in my early years of being gluten-free, what I remember most is a meal after meal of like meat and lettuce. And I say that because everything else had something in it I couldn't eat. It either had wheat or it had sugar. I mean, even, you know, the salad dressing, I'd have to, like, fight to get my lettuce out of the bowl before someone dumped something on top of the salad that I couldn't eat. And I enjoyed the gathering with my family, but it was hard when you look at everyone else's plate and all these foods that I grew up loving, and I have some ham and some turkey and some lettuce, and I'm sure that a lot of people have been in that situation, and I think if I had to identify the feelings that went along with that, you know, and I don't think in any sense that anyone intended for me to feel this way, but I think that I really felt left out, and maybe that I'd have to say my needs kind of felt as if they weren't important, and that's really a difficult place to be any time at any meal, but I think especially at the holidays. So and I really kind of had to look at, you know, why are people so hesitant to include gluten-free foods in the menu? And I find this all year long, but I think it's especially strong at the holidays. And I think that's because families are really attached to their traditions. I mean, I know in my family of origin, you know, we have our traditional menu of, you know, we have a stuffing, we do a mashed potato. My grandma always made pies. We always had homemade bread. And so there were those foods that we only had at the holidays, and everyone loved them. And so I think that it's real hard to let that go. Another thing that I come across with gluten-free, I'm sure a lot of people relate to this too, is they'll say, you know, people's understanding of gluten-free food is really narrow until they get some education around it, and they'll have something that's gluten-free, and they'll say, and it's awful. And I know we've all had that experience where we've tasted something gluten-free and we're like, I'll never eat it again. But for whatever reason, people make that connection because they had this one cracker or this one cookie or this one piece of bread that was gluten-free, and it was awful, that they think all gluten-free food is awful. Which we all know is not true. That would be equivalent of saying, oh, I had a wheat cookie that was awful, so anything made with wheat is awful. You know, and once people are more educated around what gluten-free is and the different things you can do with it, then, you know, I think that their mind changes. And so that also brings up the question, you know, if this is gluten-free, are we really going to like it? Are we going to enjoy our holiday menu? My sister recently got married, and she had the cake maker bake me gluten-free cupcakes. They were gluten-free, sugar-free cupcakes. In fact, she sent the pastry chef who made the cake one of my recipes and said, here, make this for my sister so she can have dessert at my wedding. And they were delicious. And the thing that was really funny afterward, though, is that they were all sitting I couldn't eat the whole dozen cupcakes, you know. I mean, just I had one. And the next morning, my husband and son and I were getting ready to leave the wedding, and someone said to me, oh, those are your cupcakes, you know. You need to take them all with you. Well, we're getting ready to get on a plane. And I kind of, you know, smiled and said, oh, yeah, you know, out of politeness. I said, well, let me take a couple more. So I put some on a plate, knowing I was never going to carry them on the plane. But she said, well, yeah, I guess, you know, if you have to eat that kind of food, then, you know, that's what you need to have. In her mind, unless you were gluten-free, you could not eat those cupcakes. And I got a big kick out of it, but it just reinforced for me that, you know, again, people's understanding of gluten-free is limited, and I think it goes back to why, you know, sometimes at the holidays, those that are of us who are gluten-free are left eating lettuce and meat. So what do we do about this? You know, like, how do we then get our meals to be gluten-free so that we can partake in them? I mean, especially at the holidays, but any time of the year. You know, I'm fortunate enough to have friends and family now who, when I go to a meal, you know, they do think to include me, or they'll cook something, you know, for me, or they'll say, hey, I don't really know how to do bread, so if you want to bring the bread, but they'll make sure that there's food that I can eat. But I think in situations where it's very new to people, like it was in my family when I first went gluten-free, I think one of the biggest mistakes that I made was I didn't contribute, and there were a lot of reasons for that. You know, one was that I really didn't know how to cook gluten-free. Yeah, it was almost 9 years ago, so I wasn't really even aware of, you know, a lot of the gluten-free flours and stuff. And I was scared, too. I mean, I think when it's new, you wonder, is this going to taste good? Will people like my food, you know? So what I've learned to do over the years in order to have food that everyone can enjoy is I've moved completely away from any prepackaged foods. First, you know, almost everything prepackaged, unless it's gluten-free, has wheat in it. And again, I can't eat any cane sugar, so eliminates just about everything, you know, that unless it's, you know, one of the newer products on the market. Something else that seems to work or has worked for me is to kind of take my family's favorite recipes and reverse engineer them, if you will, or break them apart if they use, you know, a spice mix in it. You know, go research what's in that spice mix and break it down and try and recreate it in my own kitchen. And it takes some time, but it's really well worth it. And then the other thing is to substitute, you know, your whole grain gluten-free flours. I like those much more than I like. I like to add more whole grain flours in than I do the starchier ones because I like that added health benefit of it. And I do, I guess I want to add in there, though, when I always cook for when I put a dish together, a meal together, I think about, I want to keep it healthy because that's the way that I cook, but I also think about who I'm cooking for. So, like, I'm most certainly not going to use, like, a whole lot of buckwheat if I'm cooking for someone who's never had buckwheat, because they're not going to enjoy that. So I try to keep the flavors of the meal so that they work for the people I'm cooking for, because my goal is really to please them. So what else can we do? Like, what are some real specific solutions we can get into about holiday meals? If you're not traveling, right, which is probably the easiest scenario. You know, you have your own kitchen available. You maybe just have a short drive or an hour drive. Ask what you can bring, you know. Ask what they need. Ask if you can provide the stuffing, or you can bring crackers for the so that you have crackers to use for the appetizers. Like, dessert is another big one that I think is hard. So ask if you can bring a dessert. You know, I don't think anyone's going to mind if you add a dessert in. So I think that's the easiest. The other thing you can do, you know, share, maybe get together if you can ahead of time with people and cook. You know, can you come early and help cook? Can you, whatever you can do to take the tension or the weirdness. And I guess I just say weirdness because I know that's what I experienced in my family, was that it was a very foreign thing, and I can't imagine that I'm the only one who's had that experience. If you're traveling, this is a lot more difficult, I think. Joe and I, my husband and I and my son, we're in Texas and we have no family here. So when we do a holiday meal, it's always if we're with our families, then we've always flown somewhere. You know, one of the kindest things, the first Thanksgiving I spent with Joe's family and my mother-in-law, she knew I was gluten-free, and she worked so hard to make that whole meal work for me. And she made what she called natural gravy. She was like, all she did was just, she cooked the turkey down, and she skimmed the fat off the broth and seasoned the broth up a little bit, and it was nice and thick from she reduced it or something. And she was like, we're just going to have natural gravy with our meal. And she just, every little touch she put on there, she wanted to make sure I was included. And that felt so good, because my husband and I weren't even married at the time. So it would have been weird for me to say, hey, can I come in and cook some food? You know, it was one of the first times I'd met her. So that was a wonderful experience. But, like, now what I would do is, if I am flying to Ohio with my family there, if we're flying to Florida with Joe's family, you know, if I wanted to, I'd ship ingredients ahead of time, you know, and because I've got them all here, and it's a lot easier than running around right before the holidays and then do some baking when I got there. I have sisters who will go shopping for me now. If I say, hey, I need this, or my mom would go ahead of time, and I ask for help, because it makes it a lot easier when I get there. And another neat thing that I've done is I've cooked with my family when I've been home, and I've shown them, oh, yeah, this is what goes into these cupcakes, or this is what goes into, you know, my bread. And so that they can taste it, they can see how I do it, and it kind of demystifies the process, where they feel like, oh, it's really kind of simple. It's not as weird, if you will, as maybe they thought it was, you know, because when you hear someone say, oh, I throw a can of beans in here and whirl it up with some other stuff and then I make cupcakes out of it, they're like, what are you talking about? But when they see you do it and then they see the finished product and they taste it and it's great, then they're like, oh, man. And in my family, you know, they're like, hey, it's healthy too. They love that.
It's Kristen really quick, if I could interrupt you. So I think what you're saying is that just as important it is for you to contribute, you as, you know, a person with celiac disease or who's eating gluten-free for other medical reasons, that can really help to stimulate the participation from your family or your significant other or friends, vice versa, because once that connection is established, you want to be able to give and they want to be able to receive, and so you can go back and forth. And I think that that takes away a lot of the pressure you were talking about and added tension and, you know, the weirdness of those maybe first few holidays together.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a baseline. What we're doing is we're educating people. And, you know, that's really what it comes down to is, you know, I don't say to my mom or my sister, hey, let me teach you all about what it means to eat gluten-free. But what I say is, look, I'm going to make these cupcakes for my sister's, you know, bridal shower. Here's what I'm going to do. And, you know, I educate them that way, you know, and that is that hands-on learning that kids do that's so natural to kids. It's the same thing with adults. And it's just exactly what you said, Kristen. It takes the fear out of it, and it makes everyone feel better about, you know, being part of the meal. So let's talk about the solutions and the recipes. What I did, and we've all had this experience when you're going to make that gluten-free recipe and you got it and you got the recipe in your head and you're so excited and you know it's going to work, and it comes out of the oven and it's a total flop. You know, I worked really hard the first to develop my holiday recipes ahead of time so that when Thanksgiving came or Christmas came, you know, it wouldn't flop. You know, I practiced them, I tested them, I had my husband taste them, and actually he drives our holiday menus. I did have one year when I decided I was going to bake, you know, this new bread recipe. I was just so excited about this bread recipe, and we waited on the bread to get finished, right? And the bread was a complete disaster. So, I mean, that's why now I'd never do that again. So,
and yeah, and so that's a good point to bring you to, you know, to share with the audience what your own Thanksgiving meal is, because for people who may be new to this, they're saying, what can I eat, or what, you know, what are some things that are innovative and original and that other people will want to try? And I think that's why I know that I'm so excited for you to share your whole foods-based Thanksgiving meal, Amy, because these are real-life recipes, and they're fantastic.
Yeah, well, like I said, my husband, pretty much I say, what do you want for Thanksgiving? And he tells me, and then I figure it out. And, you know, we do a traditional turkey, which that's simple. You know, I don't stuff my turkey. It's, you know, it's just gluten-free. I am naturally gluten-free. We always do a ham, and the last couple years I've been glazing it with, like, an orange and coconut palm sugar glaze, which is really good. I always do he loves mac and cheese, and he gets it at Christmas and Thanksgiving. And I use, like, really rich cheeses in there because he loves it. And mac and cheese, surprisingly, the Cinquiotta brand, I make that ahead of time and then just bake it off that day. So you can even make it the day before. The pasta stays nice and firm. I do a cornbread dressing. Only because it's so much easier to make enough cornbread to make a big pan of dressing than it is to make enough bread to make a big pan of dressing. But I do a cornbread dressing, and I base the flavors on what my grandmother did.
Amy, what I think is important to point out here to the audience is that all of these pictures on everybody's screen that they should be able to see right now are actually the recipes that Amy is talking about. So you have the mac and cheese up in the corner, and then the turkeys in the middle, and she's talking about the cornbread dressing in the top left-hand corner. So all of these items here are exactly what she's talking about, you'd be able to find them on her blog.
Yeah, exactly. And the bread on the bottom, I take that bread and just take that dough and plop it in pans and make rolls out of it. Or you can even freeform them and make rolls. The cranberry clementine sauce at the top, that I make in mass, and we have that from Thanksgiving all the way through the New Year on everything we eat. I do the homemade ice cream because I like to make my own ice cream. The pie crust there is the bottom right. It's a great pie crust, and it doesn't have any gums in it for people who can't have gums. And then that's the pumpkin pie recipe, actually, that's out of my book that's in that pie crust. I always add in a salad and some vegetables. We love to roast vegetables in the winter. The picture is some root vegetables, parsnips, carrots, it's acorn squash, some garlic. But I mean, it's got some Brussels sprouts in there too. You can roast any vegetable, just toss it in some olive oil and some herbs and throw it in the oven at 450 or 425, and they'll brown up beautifully. So, I mean, I think that the important thing is to educate your family. Come up with a realistic menu for you, and make food that you love. So some substitutions that you might think about, instead, if you didn't want to make bread and make cornbread stuffing, try like wild rice stuffing. Pie crust, if you don't want to, one of my favorite pie crusts of the holidays because it's so easy is just some nuts, some dates, and a little butter or a little coconut oil, and throw that in the food processor, and you can press it right into a pan, and you bake it for 8 minutes. And it's simple. And you know, the truth is about bread, if you're not a bread baker, there are so many bread products that have come on the market recently that are really good. And you might just want to shop around and see what you like. Canyon Bakehouse has got some great stuff. Char has come out with some really good stuff, and I've served that to gluten regular, if you will, eaters with no problem. And you know, just the last piece about my Thanksgiving meal, we had some friends over for Thanksgiving a couple years ago, who are not gluten-free at all. I cooked the entire meal. They ate everything. They asked to take it home. And the funny thing that they said, I saw her at church the next week, and my friend said to me, "You know, the interesting thing, I wasn't hungry all night long. I felt satisfied, and I wasn't like in the refrigerator digging all night." And I think that that's, and I'm about cooking back to that whole foods menu. When you're using whole healthy foods, you're satisfying your body's natural needs, and so you know you're not around in there picking all night long. Not that that's a bad thing at Thanksgiving, but it was just a really it was a good feeling knowing that you know I had these quote unquote people who normal or you know wheat eaters, if you will, and they loved everything that I served. So
Cool. Thank you, Amy. I think that that's a really great example of why it's important to use whole foods based items in your menu planning, because you're satisfying, like you said, both the nutritional components of getting a well-balanced diet, but at the same time, maybe without even really knowing it, you're feeding your taste buds in a different way. So that's excellent. And I would just like to point out to the audience, I don't know whether any of you noticed this before, but we actually shared the images of Amy's recipes on the screen, as well as Silvana's turkey, which was right in the middle, which is very pretty. And then on the next slide, we shared the actual names of everything, so that when you go back in and you view the archived webinar and the recording, depending on whether you're a visual learner or you prefer to have the words right in front of you, you can go both ways.
Great. Thank you so much. I was glad to share these tips, and I'm excited to hear what Silvana has to say.
Thank you, Amy. I'm excited too. So we're going to move right along to Silvana, who is actually going to be talking about really upgrading your gluten-free holiday menu. So we're taking on, I want to say, a little bit more of the gluten-free the veterans in the audience this evening, and I know that Silvana has a lot to share, and I know that she's excited, so I will let her get started.
Thanks, Kristen. And thanks, Amy, for sharing all those great tips. I am talking about gluten-free holiday baking and cooking from the perspective of a mom who is cooking for her kids, but also her relatives and, you know, other family members and friends as well. So, as we all know, when you have a group of people together, you want to please everyone. You want everyone to be enjoying the meal, sitting, laughing. It's, for me, it's not just about the food, it's about the experience. And especially since Isaiah, my son, who was diagnosed at age 10, he had grown up eating these feasts, you know, for Thanksgiving and having his favorites, which of course included several types of pie. It was really hard for him, you know, to sit at the table, and you know, I didn't want him to feel deprived and to look at stuff and think he couldn't eat it. So my solution was to reorganize the table and to not have anything on the table that he couldn't eat. And of course, everything had to look and taste like the original or better. So I've come up with many different techniques to really master what, you know, I want to make a pumpkin pie and I want it to look and taste identical. So it's kind of a bit of playing around with ingredients and proportions, but flavor is key. And so the flavor comes from the ingredients. So tonight I'm going to talk about that, of how to upgrade your menu and challenge yourself to make sure that your table is full of foods that everyone wants to eat. So the objectives tonight are to explain the value of cooking for both flavor and performance, which I just explained. I'm going to give you my top pantry ingredients to do this, and then I'm going to share some recipes with you to feed your holiday. So what's so important about flavor? Well, obviously for Isaiah and for a lot of us, we have food memories. We grew up eating certain things at certain times of the year, and they mean a lot to us, and they mean a lot to our families. So it was really important to me to recreate those memories and not have to say goodbye to them. So you don't have to say goodbye either. And eating, at least for me, is very emotional. You know, I am half Italian, so there is that part of me. But it's about, like I said, the experience. You know, you have to ask yourself, what do you get from food? Do you just want a really good meal because you're hungry and you just need to feed yourself? Do you want to recreate an experience? Do you take pleasure of eating at every meal, which is the way I live? You know, I really don't ever just eat to eat. I eat because it makes me feel good. And also, it makes me feel good to cook for others and see them enjoying their meal. And baking, even, I know so many people in the regular cooking world who don't bake. They don't know how to bake. They're afraid to bake. Fear of baking is true for gluten-full eaters and gluten-free eaters. So, you know, don't think it's because you're gluten-free that baking is a challenge. It's a challenge to a lot of people, and it's because baking is a science. It's not, you know, throw a bunch of stuff in a hot pan and you have some vegetables or something. You know, you really have to play with proportions. You have to play with ingredients that can deliver, you know, the finished product that you're looking for. And in baking, there are a lot of failures. Like Amy mentioned with the bread, yeah, it's going to happen, no big deal, you know, move on and try again. So I have had plenty of failures, but it just motivates me to keep trying and take a leap of faith. There are some things where I thought, including bread, that I could never make. I was just, it was one recipe after another, and, you know, they were all, like, just inedible. But then, you know, you take a step back, you give it some time, and you get back out there and try again. Surprise yourself. You know, you don't think you can do something, well, why not give it a try? It's especially these days, even, I guess it's been almost 6 years since Isaiah was diagnosed, and there's so many other ingredients out there than there were 6 years ago, and the opportunities now, you know, and the options out there are just crazy. You know, it's wonderful how many gluten-free ingredients you can use. And ultimately, like I've always said, you know, you want to make yourself happy, you want to make your family happy. So let me tell you how that's going to happen. So my top six holiday pantry items are, of course, you need a flour replacement. Obviously, a lot of us have different nutritional needs. And so, you know, my personal gluten-free all-purpose flour works for me and my family. But there are also plenty of other flour blends on the market or on people's blogs that satisfy other nutritional or health needs. If you're paleo, if you're grain-free, you know, there are, if you can't have rice, there are, Carol Fenster has an amazing sorghum flour blend. You know, so it's out there. If you need it, it's there for you. And then you need a liquid for browning. So how are you going to get anything that golden brown? It's not easy in a gluten-free baked good, you know, because you don't have the fats, you don't have the protein that would come from a wheat grain. So you need other fats, and liquid is a good one. So I personally use rice milk, or I make my own almond milk, which is super creamy and delicious. And there's a recipe on my blog for that. The other thing is fat. As I said, butter is always good. My house is dairy-free. So we use, my personal favorite is really the whipped buttery spread from Earth Balance is phenomenal, but it does have soy. The all-vegetable shortening from Spectrum, also really good, but has soy as well. So for soy-free, I use unflavored coconut oil, which is dairy-free and soy-free, and works really well. And then you need, for me, what I've played with is trying to reduce the amount of flour that would normally be required in a recipe by adding substitutes. So I'll replace a quarter or a half of the all-purpose flour with blanched almonds or hazelnuts, which give it flavor and a really nice moist texture. Cornmeal works well. And cocoa powder, obviously, if you're looking to do something chocolatey instead of melting chocolate, which would give you a chocolate flavor, you could swap in some cocoa powder and give it really rich chocolate flavor and reduce the amount of flour that you need. And as we know, gluten-free flours can be expensive, and so this could also be a cost-saving measure for you too. And, you know, one of the sort of ironic twists of fate that I learned in testing gluten-free recipes when Isaiah was first diagnosed is I needed a thickener, whether it was in a meatball or a soup or anything, and I just looked through my cabinets, and one day I stared up and I saw rice cereal, you know, and I thought, well, you know, what if I crushed this to essentially pulverized it? You know, I use a rolling pin. But you could also put it in the food processor, and it worked amazingly well. And so I use it as a breadcrumb substitute, but if you think about it, it kind of makes sense because rice cereal absorbs milk or any liquid, you know, any cereal. When you stir some liquid together with cereal, it absorbs it. So I was really looking for some sort of thickener, and it worked really well. And then I always have dairy-free chocolate chips around because I do a lot of baking, and my daughter just eats them as a snack, and so do I. So in terms of cooking tips, what do you need to do so that you too can make anything that's gluten-free and dairy-free, if you are dairy-free as well, and make it taste like the original or better? So, as I mentioned before, practice is really key. You know, it could be anything that you do in life, whether it's yoga or the piano. You know, you really need practice. You're not just going to become an overnight sensation, you know, in the kitchen. You give yourself some time, you know, get used to it. A lot of people who I speak with never cooked in the first place, you know, and they were like the queen of the drive-thru, you know, or just ordered in, or, you know, really didn't cook very much. So give yourself some time, get used to the kitchen, practice, think about what happened. Was it really good? Was it not so good? And start over, you know. So the key for me is just spend time in your kitchen. Get to know your ingredients. If you know your ingredients and what they do in any recipe, you can then take that ingredient and use it for other recipes. So that's what happened with me, certainly with the flour blend. It took me about 2 months to figure out a blend that worked, and then I could use it in every recipe. So there are those shining moments where you discover an ingredient and then it like sets you free. So spend some time with your ingredients, and that can happen to you too. And then pick the right ingredients for the job. Once you get to know your ingredients and you see how they work, well, let them do all the work for you. You know, you don't make your life any more difficult. You know, it's cooking is supposed to be fun. And I certainly think, especially around the holidays, it can be stressful anyway, lots of people coming over. You know, keep it simple, keep it pressure-free. And then I get a lot of questions about replacing ingredients, which is totally doable. And if you do this, just know that it may not look like the picture if you're cooking from a cookbook or a blog, but it doesn't mean that it won't taste just as good. And tonight I'm sharing with you two recipes. One is an old school Italian raspberry jam filled hazelnut cookie. This is a cookie that Isaiah and I, every day after school, during elementary school, we developed a rather sugary habit of going to this Italian bakery in Carroll Gardens, which was around the corner from his school, and picking up, he had the choice of 6 cookies or 7 cookies he could pick every afternoon, which in retrospect may not have been such a great routine, but it made him happy, and I always liked seeing the smile on his face. So when we could no longer do that, I really focused on, like, how do I recreate this cookie for Isaiah? And the truth is, it's become a household favorite. And the pine nut cookies, that's the other recipe I'll be sharing. And this is a cookie I grew up with my family. My father's from Italy, and we lived there for several years, and I used to summer there every other summer. And it's something we used to always pick up at the local pastry shop. And the truth is, pine nut cookies can have flour in them, and almond paste actually has flour in it sometimes, at least the ones you find at the grocery store. So I decided I'd make my own, and it was better than I could have ever imagined. So with a little experimenting and remembering that it's just food, you can really have a lot of fun in the kitchen.
Sylvan, I have a quick question for you. For the 2 cookies, the recipes that you're sharing, of course, the audience can head to the links we provided on the screen. But, you know, once they get to the website and they're reviewing all the ingredients and, you know, they're going through the steps and the instructions, is there anything that you think that you should share with them now, things that maybe you learned several times into making the recipes, into trying them out? You know, any tips or words of wisdom, I guess I would call it, that you think they should be aware of? You know, sort of like you said, don't be upset if they don't turn out as pretty as they do in a picture in a cookbook.
Yeah, I have to say, I had never used a cookie gun, or cookie press, I think it's also called, in my life. So the truth is, my cookies in this picture, they could probably look even better if they were the right shape. You know, these are kind of a funny sort of butterfly-looking shape. I don't know. But, you know, it didn't matter to me, because what mattered was the flavor, you know. And I think they look pretty cute, but I would just say that ingredients do matter. So there are, in this case, I believe I used ground hazelnuts, and they are blanched hazelnuts. The truth is you could use hazelnuts with skins on them, but it's going to be a much darker dough. And you could also substitute almond flour. The one I recommend the most is Honeyville, and that's because it's extremely finely ground. So you're not, it's, the cookie is going to be uniform in texture. It's not going to be crumbly, you know, and these are critical things, especially when you're asking a gluten-free flour to do a lot of work for you. You want to help it out as much as you can. So that's what I would say with that. And the pine nut cookies, I did find one brand that was or is gluten-free for the almond paste, which I have on the blog. I forget what it's called, but it's so it's on the blog, sylvanaskitchen.com. And, you know, it's I made the cookies a few different ways. If you like them taller, you know, sort of rounder and taller, you just use less liquid, you know, which in this case are egg whites. Or if you want them sort of slightly flat but rounded, which is what I prefer, then you add a little more. So, you know, even if you're given a recipe, you don't always have to follow it to the T. You know, you can improvise. And, you know, what I tend to do is I try it a couple of different ways. I see if it disappears, if my family eats it or not. I have made things that people take a bite and they put it back down and walk away, you know. And, yeah, it kind of crushes my heart, but I understand. And I understand it. I need to go back in the kitchen and try again. You know, so definitely having two kids who are brutally honest and a husband who is, on top of everything else, vegetarian, it really keeps me busy and I'm constantly learning and growing in my kitchen, and that's something that I love, you know, and that you guys can do too.
I think that's a very good point and sort of circles back both to Amy's earlier discussion on contributing with ingredients or recipes, or really being willing to have an open conversation with everybody, because if you are both giving and receiving in this sense, you are able to grow and then turn that into maybe a better recipe or a better Christmas or a better Hanukkah than years past. So I think those are great points. Thank you.
Yeah, and there's my blog was just redesigned, and I put this gluten-free 101 section on there, which gives all of the substitutions, ingredient substitutions that I've used myself. And, you know, they do differ in terms of the end result, but they all work, you know. So I encourage people, even if they can't have certain ingredients, to check it out and see where they can make changes in recipes so that they can eat whatever they want.
Perfect. Well, thank you. So with that, I'm going to open up everything for questions now. So both Amy and Sylvana are on the line. The first question, I'll give this to Sylvana, because you talked so much about brown rice and rice cereal, and one woman is wondering if you are referring to cold rice cereal, or is it, you know, the rice cereal that you would eat in the morning that's perhaps served hot and is cooked? I have a feeling you're talking about the former, but just to clarify.
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. It is the rice cereal that you use for breakfast. So my preferred brand is Erewhon, but Kellogg's has now come out with the Rice Krispies as well that is gluten-free. And that's why it was in my cabinet, because we ate it for breakfast. And then I thought, well, what else could I use this for? This is one of the ingredients I actually didn't have to give away when Isaiah was diagnosed.
So is that that's a hot cereal, but do you use it before it's cooked then? You use the flakes?
No, it's a cold cereal.
It's the cold cereal. Okay, classic, so that's what she was asking.
Yeah, classic Rice Krispies type cereal.
Good. Okay. Well, thank you, Silvana. I hope that her name is Susan, so I hope that she's satisfied with that answer. I will turn the next question over to Amy. So welcome back, Amy. One person is wondering if you could speak to some of the better gluten-free side dishes that you have found gluten-full lovers, I'll call them, have really also enjoyed during your Thanksgiving meals. I know that you had talked about a cornbread dressing and mashed potatoes, and anything else maybe that you didn't initially have on your Whole Foods-based menu that you might be willing to share with the audience.
We keep it pretty traditional between holidays, and I think it's just because how my husband and I both grew up. Our menu is, at least in my family growing up, and I know in his too, it was the same every year. So I don't change up my holiday menus often because those are the one times that we have those really special foods. So there's really this is pretty much what I'm gonna make next week. Except I think that we're gonna do our vegetables a little different this year. The vegetables I change up from year to year, but I always do mashed potatoes, and the trick to great mashed potatoes is to use a ricer, not like a hand mixer or a KitchenAid, because it keeps them light and fluffy. But yeah, this is what you see is what you get with this one.
I would say, if I could jump in there, I,
Absolutely, please
you know,
do.
one, stuffing is an interesting thing because traditionally it's made with bread, and you can with all the if, whether you make your own bread or buy store-bought bread, which is like Amy said, there's so much out there right now, and a lot of it is, well, some of it is pretty good, if I'm being honest here. But the other thing you can use are store-bought saltines. They have these gluten-free, Char makes them. I used to make, my mother is Jewish, and she used to make a matzah meal stuffing every Thanksgiving and every Christmas. And since I couldn't make that anymore, I decided to substitute crushed gluten-free saltines for the matzah meal, and it was amazing. So that's one trick I've discovered along the way. And then cornbread. If you make a gluten-free cornbread, which is super easy, and again, it's one of those, half cornmeal, so you're not using a lot of gluten-free flour. You bake that first, cut it into squares, and then I like to cook it with bacon and nuts and all sorts of good stuff, So there are other options than just your classics.
I also use I make a cornbread stuffing every year for my family, and I will admit that half of my family is really good about gluten free, and the other half still doesn't get it. And so it's that's quite the challenge. But it's always good to know when the half that I know doesn't get it doesn't realize that the gluten free cornbread in front of them is really gluten free. And so if I could just share for a minute, I use cranberries and rosemary and apples and celery, and I like the addition of bacon, Sylvana. I think that adds probably a really nice, like, juicy flavor. So,
Oh, extra salt and smokiness. Yeah, all those ingredients sound amazing, Kristen.
yeah, perfect. So moving right along, we will add. Well, I'll take another question, and this seems to be about dessert. So this might be good for Silvana with your baking expertise. Do you think that a gluten-free granola fruit crisp is an appropriate dessert? This woman is hesitant to serve it because of the oats, so of course, she would make sure first that they're certified gluten-free. But do you think that having an oat dish is really appropriate for the holiday time?
Absolutely. I would totally recommend it. If you want to make it a little extra holiday, I would, depending what your fruits are, I've made like an apple with some fresh cranberries, thrown a little pumpkin spice, not just into your fruit, but into the granola. I think if you give that granola a little extra holiday flavor, people will be happy. to spoon into that, you know, and really enjoy it. And of course, if you can do a little whipped cream on top, whether it's you know, dairy free, or Amy has an amazing coconut whipped cream recipe, you know, that's just, that just puts it over the top. So
that
don't
hesitate.
Yeah.
That sounds very, very good. I will admit that I am a big fan of gluten-free oats now that I can tolerate them. So I agree with Silvana wholeheartedly. I think a fruit crisp is a great way to go. And you can really use some fun seasonal ingredients in there. So another question about substitutions, actually. What do you both recommend for the best flour or substitute to use in a gravy?
You know, I had trouble getting my gravy to thicken up for, what I ended up doing is just throwing some, this is how my grandma did it. She took white flour and put it in like a pint mason jar with some, water, and she shook it up and, would then use that to thicken her gravy until it got to the consistency that she wanted it to be. And so I just did that, but I used sweet rice flour, and it thickened right up, and it was beautiful.
Yeah, I would add, you know, at Easy Eats, we have a mustard pan gravy on our website that a friend of mine, her name is Tracy, she developed, and it's amazing. She uses cornstarch for that. And if you don't want corn, you could just swap. So I'm looking at the recipe now. It uses 3.5 tablespoons of cornstarch. If you wanted to not use cornstarch, you could substitute that with arrowroot or a gluten-free flour blend. You know, and if you are using a flour blend, you would likely double that amount. Or you could probably even get away with 6 tablespoons. Or, you know, the beauty about gravy is you can start with whatever you think might work. It depends on the flour blend, you know, even if it's a quarter cup, and then you can always whisk in more. So, and God forbid you get a couple lumps in there, you can always put it through a sieve, you know, and you know, so there are tricks. You don't ever think it's a failure. It can always be saved.
You know, the big problem I had with gravy in the beginning was getting the proportions right, like with the cornstarch or the arrowroot. It, for some reason, by the time I would thicken it, and then by the time we served dinner, it was like this thick gelatinous mess, you know, so then I'd have to go through thinning it out. I don't know why I always had trouble with both of those, which is why I went to the sweet rice flour.
So yeah, I've heard a lot of the sweet rice flour, and Silvana also suggested cornstarch and arrowroot. So I know that you'd be able to go to Easy Eats and look for more of those suggestions. So I guess we'll take our final question now before we go into closing housekeeping items. And this is an interesting question because, sort of to Silvana's point about her husband being a vegetarian, not only do many of us have to deal with both gluten-free and dairy-free and then additional allergen-free, but many people also choose to be pescatarians or vegetarians or vegans as well. So do you have any suggestions for a great vegetarian main dish that everybody at Thanksgiving could enjoy? And I have a feeling you're probably going to say something about mushrooms, but that's just a guess.
Well, you know, it's funny because it is hard living with a vegetarian when you yourself, and of course I'm talking about me, I eat almost everything. So, but what I make, which is actually, it's turned out to be Isaiah's favorite thing to eat, and he's requested it again this year, is a Swiss chard pie. And, you know, leave it to me to take something sweet and turn it into something savory, but it's very rich, and it's very satisfying, and I don't think I've ever published it, so I'm going to have to put it on my blog. But it is very hearty and very rich. And, I mean, in terms of mushrooms, you know, mushrooms are great, but they're not that filling. They have a lot of moisture in them. So, you know, in terms of my husband, like, he's a guy. He wants, like, lots of food on his plate, you know. So he has a Swiss chard pie, and then he's actually an amazing vegetable eater and salad eater. So I make sure he has all that. And then the stuffing, he loves, you know, stuffing I make vegetarian, because I, like Amy, cook it out of the turkey, and so I don't, it's not, you know, touching any turkey, and I can use vegetable broth for that. And so that's what I do for my vegetarian husband.
Thanks, Silvana. Amy, do you have any, just a few seconds that you wanted to share about a vegetarian main dish?
I've never done a vegetarian main dish, but I'll tell you, I do a lot of vegetarian cooking, and Drina Burton has an incredible vegan book, and everything I've made out of there, my husband has gobbled up. I've never done a vegetarian main dish. But she's got great resources. She's on, if you'd want to check her out.
And could you just say her name one more time for the audience?
Yeah, it's Drina Burton. I think it's Plant Powered Kitchen.
Okay.
And I do a lot of vegetarian cooking. It's on my blog, but nothing. I haven't done any for the holidays. So.
Well, that's okay. That there's always a first time for everything. So I think that the audience will be. You both gave some really good suggestions. So I think that everybody will be happy this evening. So. Thank you both. As we close, I just wanted to, again, thank this evening's sponsor, Crunchmaster, for making this educational webinar possible. I have a feeling that most people in attendance this evening are very familiar with their whole grain, gluten-free, and oven-baked crackers, but you can also see here that their products are nutritionally sound with a whole variety of flavors and other health benefits. They can be found in many grocery stores, including Wegmans and Costco and Walmart and Sam's Club. So please head out to your local store to pick them up. And of course, don't forget that 5 of tonight's webinar participants will actually be receiving a special gluten-free prize pack with 2 of their latest products, which are geared towards more of the teen and adolescent and child audience with Grammy Crisps and Cheesy Crisps. And next, in just continuing with the holiday spirit that Silvana and Amy have both shared with us, several tips, I would like to point the audience to our website where they can take part in a variety of events and activities we have going on. We have a tip of the day, and I know that Easy Eats actually just shared one the other day, which I thought was great. Silvana may remember this. I'm not sure if she was behind it, but the tip was that when you're waiting for something to come out of the oven or in the blender or whatever, to take some time to do some breathing exercises at the kitchen counter, because the holidays can be a very stressful time if you don't take time for yourself. And then we have a gift guide and an e-cookbook and, of course, a recipe contest. And I hope that you enter, because the grand prize is actually a year's worth of Crunchmaster crackers. So you can head to our website to learn more about that there. And in continuing with our monthly webinars, as we end the year, we have 2 more. We have actually one tomorrow with Lori Higgins, who is a extremely well-known expert on diabetes. And so a lot of our community members have asked us to speak to type 1 diabetes and type 2 diabetes and how that relates to celiac. So we hope you'll join us at 2 o'clock tomorrow. And then later on in December, we're going to be speaking with experts Dan Leffler and Joe Murray, both doctors and both fantastic. They are on our medical advisory board. So I'm really looking forward to that, because we're taking all of your questions and it's actually going to formulate the whole 60-minute discussion. So please be sure to send me your questions by this Friday, November the 16th. And then as we're planning for the new year, we already have our first webinar set up, and that's going to be on January 22nd with Tricia Thompson. So that's going to be on alcoholic beverage labeling as it relates to gluten-free something that is sure to be really informative, and I know that not many people, if at all, are really aware of everything that is in that area. So we hope you'll join us then. And finally, continuing with the holiday spirit, Giving Tuesday is going to be on Tuesday, November 27th, and NFCA is going to be participating in this nationwide campaign by asking everybody to give to their favorite charities to continue the holiday spirit with Black Friday, and then Monday is Cyber Monday, and then Tuesday will be Giving Tuesday. And secondly, you can please vote for NFCA. We have been we've been nominated for several categories in the gluten-free awards from gfreak.com. And then, of course, we have plenty of more recipes to share featuring Crunchmaster as well. So you can see two of them on your screen, and you can just search those terms on our website. So in closing, always welcome to your feedback and questions and comments. You can reach me at kvoorhees@celiaccentral.org. And I know that both Amy and Silvana are eager to hear from you, and they have shared their information as well. So please be sure to check out the newly designed Silvana's Kitchen, which is just this week, and the next week Easy Eats will be putting out their special holiday issue. And I know that Amy has a whole variety of timely topics on SimplySugar and GlutenFree.com as well. So thank you both for participating again this evening. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Kristen.
You're welcome. And to those who your questions were not answered, I will address those afterwards, and we will take care of you through celiaccentral.org and perhaps reach out to the larger community. So thank you, everybody, again, and I will see you tomorrow. Good
thank
night.
Thank you. Good night.
Thanks.